White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 381.
This is the AU Wishbone, continued off-season coverage.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we're back. We took a couple of weeks off, and I posted episode 2 of We Believed, our big 10-part documentary series on what it's been like to be an Auburn fan for the last, several years. I posted episode 2 for all of our listeners out there in the regular podcast feed. Episode 3 has been up for two or three weeks now for our patrons only to get kind of that, you get that bonus. They can listen to it early if they want to. And we were just deciding we're going to go ahead and record episode 5 next week, which means it'll be in the editing pipeline, which means episode 4 should be coming along soon. And episode 4 is very special because this is the one about the first time ever, 1989, Auburn hosting Alabama, first time ever. And we're going to talk a little bit about that just for a minute coming up here. Also, one other thing I want to point out, we are closing in on, I forgot the number. We're closing in on a milestone on the show. You know that we have various ways that people can hear our show, but for those that go to Podbean or iTunes, I'm thinking about the other show. The White Rocket show is closing in on 50,000 downloads, but our show is at 183,000. So never mind. I was thinking we were closing in on 150. We passed 150 a long time ago, so we're in good shape. All right, so how you doing? What you been up to? And what do you think about the state of Auburn right now?
I'm doing well. I'm enjoying the off season. It was nice to get a little break after the bowl games and all that stuff, and excited to get back and think about it some and talk about it some. Been watching old basketball, been doing a few other things, and noticing the news and what's been going on at Auburn and thinking about it, so we'd have something to talk about.
Yeah, we got a lot of little odds and ends. Nothing, I think, huge this time, but several little odds and ends, certainly we'll talk about the basketball team a little bit in a little while. I guess first up, you want to talk about the 89 thing?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So knowing that for the last 2 weeks, I've been, slaving away on editing episode 4, because this is a special one, right? This is about this episode 4 of We Believe covers 1989 through 1992, but most of that time obviously goes into 89 because that was a special season with, some special games and one particularly special game. And so it's been on my mind, obviously. I've been having to go out and get audio clips and interview clips and, in our conversation, all that. So it's been kind of consuming my brain the last few days. And with that in mind, I ran a poll on Twitter. And I don't know why this came to me, but it just seemed like it would be an interesting question to see what people thought. And what did I ask?
You need to say it because I'm not. Okay. I was trying to remember today the way you worded it, okay, and I didn't want to say it wrong.
Okay, it was something to the effect of, I said, "Would you trade away the 1989 first time ever Iron Bowl win to have won the 2013 game with Florida State in the Rose Bowl?" And the what it really gets at is twofold. One, it kind of gets at how old are you. But the other thing it gets at is which do you feel was more valuable, right? Which would you keep if you could have one? Which one of those would you rather have won? And what's interesting is that very, very few, I'll give the results in a second, but what was interesting was that very few people were in the gray area on it. People that responded, and people could vote, but they also could reply back to me, and I got a lot of replies back. and had some interesting conversations about it with a number of people, including, you know, Auburn Twitter friends. But the thing was, people that said yes were definitive. Oh, they had no doubt. Absolutely. They were the ones that said yes were like, why would I want to keep a random Iron Bowl win?
You need to be clear about what yes means when you say
okay.
Yes.
Yes is I would trade it away. I would trade away the 89 first time ever Iron Bowl win. I would lose to Alabama on that day in 89 if I could beat Florida State after the 2013 season in the Rose Bowl, in the last BCS game. And the people that said yes, I would trade it away, They were telling me, why should I care about keeping some random 1980s Iron Bowl win when we could have a championship, you know, a national championship? And they were very passionate about that, you know, that a championship matters more. And in fact, some of them even went so far as to say that if you claim winning that Iron Bowl was more important than winning the national championship game over Florida State, it's like big brother, little brother syndrome, and you're saying that beating Alabama is more important than winning championships, which is a bad thing to say. You know, in other words, they were criticizing the thought. They were condemning the idea that an Auburn person would glorify Alabama that way by saying beating them. In other words, you know what I'm saying? They seemed to think that it was saying sure. too much good about Alabama. It was putting Alabama on too high of a pedestal. Okay, we can talk about that. And I don't want this to go on all night, but we're just going to have a concise little conversation, but I just want to paint the picture first. But the people that said no were every bit as definitive, and they all were saying, if you don't understand why, you know, it's not about beating Alabama, it's not about just winning the Iron Bowl, it's not about just beating Alabama. That game meant something critical to the entire history of Auburn. And if you don't understand it, you know, if you think that it's just another Iron Bowl worth trading away, then you just don't understand what it means to be an Auburn fan in Auburn history. You know, so I can understand both viewpoints. I can sympathize with both viewpoints. I just happen to think one of them is completely wrong. Okay. So what do you think?
I understand. I mean, like, you did a good job explaining both sides, and I understand both sides. They both make logical sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I've thought about this since you posed this question, and I've tried to think about separating myself and my personal experience from the question.
Okay.
I mean, because I was at the 1989 game, I'm trying not to let that experience cloud my judgment. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I understand.
In the argument. But I think, I voted and I didn't hesitate to vote, and I voted for the 1989 game. And the reason is because I agree with your argument about that if the reason that people nowadays think it's just another Iron Bowl is because it happened and we're way past that now.
Yes.
But at the time, do you know how today in 2019, like, Central Florida would really love to schedule Alabama to go down there and play them mm-hmm. in Orlando.
Sure.
And Alabama would never in a million years do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how Alabama fans felt about playing at Auburn before 1989.
Mm-hmm.
The game was in Birmingham, which was where they played three or four other home games a year. It was literally a home, you know, it was like Arkansas where they do the two stadiums. They don't do it much anymore, but they still did it. And Alabama played multiple home games a year. Bryant Denny was a shell of what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And they played a lot of home games in Birmingham, and it was a home field advantage for them. It was not a neutral site thing, despite what people would say.
And yet, if we complained, they would say basically, you're lucky we play you at all. Shut up.
Yeah. And you then get 50% of the tickets or whatever.
And yeah, and they'd say, and you're getting a neutral field in Birmingham anyway, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, right? They would absolutely condescend down to us, and they knew it was BS, and we knew it was BS, and they knew that we knew it was BS, and they would say it anyway.
I mean, it was a home field advantage where they played multiple games per year, and the ushers all wore Alabama hats.
And there's a statue of Bear Bryant outside.
That's right. But if you think that was a neutral site, then that's your opinion. So if we had not gone to this place and had the 1989 game, we'd still be in that kind of stupid situation with them. So it wasn't inevitable that it was going to change.
No, and the forces against it, and by the way, we didn't really talk about this on the We Believe. Let me just throw this in real quick. That's kind of a supplement. The forces against it were more than you might think, because of course Alabama wanted to keep it the way it was. And even Keith Jackson in an interview, I remember Keith Jackson saying, well, Bear knew he had an advantage and he wanted to keep it. Number two, Bear Bryant basically ran the SEC up until he almost until the year he died. He made the ultimate decisions. He was like the SEC commissioner. And so he said, we're going to play that game in Birmingham. And the whole rest of the SEC said, yes, sir. It was no option, you know. And then, Bear had to die for this to happen. That's just a fact. It would not have happened in Bear's lifetime. He wouldn't have let it happen. And so not only did you have Alabama, just the university itself saying it's going to be in Birmingham, you had Bear Bryant saying it's going to be in Birmingham, and you had the city of Birmingham. This is important, John. You had the city of Birmingham saying, this is our Rose Bowl. This is our Orange Bowl. We can't let anybody take it away. And so there was political and economic pressure on both Alabama and Auburn to keep it in Birmingham. So Pat Dye had to go up against all those forces and just wrestle it down to Auburn.
I think that's a good description. I mean, the political forces at the state and local level were considerable.
Yeah.
And the basic fact is that Auburn had to give away a home game to make it happen.
Yes.
Gave away the 91 game. Ugh. As the price for the deal.
I was at the 91 game, too, and it was a joke. Ugh.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we basically played, them there 3 years in a row in return for getting the series moved to home and home.
Yep. That's right.
So it was a big deal, a historic deal, and I think it mattered for Auburn, and I think it mattered for kind of evening the playing field with us and Alabama in that sense. And so, and I understand the championship argument, the flags fly forever and all that stuff. I get it. And I that Florida State loss is painful. It hurts.
Absolutely.
Still.
It's still my number one. Yeah, it's my number one loss. It passed the 88 LSU.
It is painful, that
yes.
game.
Yeah, absolutely. Believe me, there's a reason I chose that as the game to put up against. I could have said some other game, I chose the one that hurt me the most to say, would you swap it? I chose the one that made me that I think is the most important for the one that was the most painful loss, and that way you balance the two. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But I do think it was the most. I think it was the most important regular season game in Auburn football history.
Yes.
More than if you want to say the 2010 Iron Bowl or the 2013 Iron Bowl or 1957 or, 72, whatever else you want to say.
Well, look, those games all were means to an end, right? In other words, beating, the comeback in Bryant Denny in 2010 was a great, 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 great win. But it was a piece of a bigger puzzle. Beating Oregon in the national championship game, greatest. I mean, I've got it. Life affirming thing. Yes, absolutely. The kick six. I mean, most amazing game in college football history. All that is true, but those were all to some degree pieces to a bigger puzzle. The 1989 Alabama game was a thing unto itself. It had never happened before, and the first time ever would never happen again. And it was about changing our mindset, changing our culture, changing our world. It was the Berlin Wall coming down, as Pat Dye said. The Berlin Wall only comes down, hopefully, one time, Germany can win other wars, but the Berlin Wall only comes down one time. You know what I'm saying? So that was it. And so it was its own thing. It wasn't part of something else other than history and who we were as a people, to kind of paraphrase how our great Auburn historian David Housel would put it. You know, it was who we were as a people. It was coming out of bondage, like the Israelites. You know, it was metaphysically important beyond just a football game. And like, you know, as many, many people said to me when they were voting, you had to be there, or you had to be part of it, I think, to fully appreciate it. And I think that's what we've seen. I can respect the opinions of people who disagree, but I've got to think that 90-something percent of them just hadn't been born yet, or were too little to really, you know, to appreciate before and after. The actual numbers came in, 56% would trade away 89 to get the Florida State win. 44% said, no, I would not trade that away, out of about 800 votes. So that's a lot of votes, and that's a 12-point win for trading it away. So what do you let's wrap up by just saying, what do you think about how it came out?
I'm not surprised. I mean, I think it does say something about the age of the voters. But I understand why people voted the way they did. It's tough to say a regular season game over national title. That's a really hard argument to make, and I don't think you could do that for any other game.
No, you absolutely couldn't. No, I agree. I mean,
let me ask you a question. If you have to give up one win, the 2010 Oregon game or the 89 Alabama game?
Oh, Oregon. John,
there you go.
The 89 Iron Bowl is not a game. It's a social event in the history of the state of Alabama. Winning the national championship was something I wanted my entire life. But people didn't wake up the next day saying, we're in a different world now. They said, thank God Almighty, we finally closed the deal on something we've had near misses to for the last 53 years. So, you know, it's like, I keep trying to, you know me, I like analogies and metaphors, and I keep trying to think of one, and honestly, I can't think of one. Because nothing, if it occurs to me before the end of the show, I'll say it. But no, I would not trade the 89 Iron Bowl win for anything, because that would mean I'd have to go back and be sitting there in that stadium and see us lose to Alabama the first time they ever came down to our stadium. We'd lose. And, you know, inconsequentially to that, we would lose the SEC championship that we won that day. We'd lose the state championship we won that day. We'd lose an Iron Bowl win. All of those we'd lose Pat Dye's last big Iron Bowl win. You know, all those things are true. But aside from that, it was so much more than a football game. It was so much more than a championship. You know, beating Oregon wins the national championship of college football. Beating Alabama that day won the championship of life over Alabama, you know?
Okay, Coach Jones.
That's what I was thinking. But that, seriously, I mean, that's the kind of championship of life he wishes he could have won at Tennessee right there, you know. So, all right, well, let's move along then. Again, we'll have episode 4 of We Believed up for our patrons in a few days, probably Monday in our regular time slot. The episode 3 will go up in the regular show, and episode 4 will go up for the patrons. And you'll get to hear John and I talked for like an hour about that game and clips from it, audio, interviews. You know, Reynolds is on there and Jerry Hinnon and so forth. And so you can judge for yourself. We had some coaching changes at the football program. We have a new car.
Yes, we did. Tim Horton is out as running back coach, and Carno Williams is in.
Now, I'm happy about Caddy because everybody loves Caddy. But, in fact, speaking of the 2010 National Championship game in Phoenix, in Glendale, we saw Cadillac there. we saw him and said hey when he was signing autographs in front of the fanfare thing. But what happened with Tim Horton? Do we know?
I think one thing is, Auburn's running back recruiting the last couple of years have been okay. But we hadn't signed, a big time 4 or 5 star running back in a while. Not since like Kerryon.
Yeah.
And we've gotten good players, but we were not getting, the very top shelf 5 star running backs that were going other places in the SEC. And we, Auburn, we're going to run the ball a lot. We churn out. We have a history of great running backs. We ought to be getting better running backs than we have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was part of it. Tim Horton has a reputation of being genuinely one of the nicest guys in college football and a really good human being. So he's staying on, in some off the field role.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, he's hanging around. They just reassigned him, right?
Yeah, he has tried to get another job the last couple of years. He's tried to get an offensive coordinator or a head coaching job at a smaller school and has not been able to.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I didn't know that.
I think that was that was him looking for those things. So, okay. Carnell does not have a lot of coaching experience.
No.
He's got a little bit of high school experience, and then he had signed with this, small startup pro league thing in Birmingham. But so he, doesn't have a lot of experience as a coach.
He's been with IMG, right? Doing that for last year or two.
He was doing that for a while. So, but he's a big name. He's a very charismatic guy that everybody loves, obviously. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, he'll go out there and hit the ground and be a big recruiter for Auburn. And that's what we need at that position right now. We need somebody who can bring in some big time players. And then it'll be interesting to see the changes in terms of him as a coach, in terms of how players are deployed. How many carries different guys get and what the rotation looks like and stuff. I think Tim Horton's been around so long, we kind of know between him and Gus how those things are going to go. So it's interesting to see with Carnell, if that is different, if we could see anything different.
Yeah. Be interesting. Really will. Signing day coming up February 6th. It's nowhere near what it used to be just a couple of years ago because of the early signing period. It feels like Alabama basically got everybody they wanted in December and they're done, right? So we got about, 8 or 9 spots to finish out?
Mm-hmm. 8 or 9 spots left. And obviously the biggest guy left out there is still committed to is George Pickens.
Yeah.
He's like a 5-star wide receiver that, has been committed to Auburn for 2 years now.
Yeah.
But everybody's coming after him in the country. So the pressure is really on. Hopefully we can keep him. If we do, I think he's an impact guy next year who could come in and play and make a plays like some of our young receivers did this year. And then we clearly need more offensive linemen, and that's a big priority going forward. And they're looking at a couple other things. We did get a grad transfer from Arizona State who's a H-back kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like J.J. Richardson, something like that. But so he's potentially a grad transfer replacement for Chandler Cox.
Right.
So that would be interesting to watch. I don't think there's any other of those kind of players out there, grad transfer types, that we're serious about, but you never know. And there's a big defensive lineman out of Mississippi that's Hardy that's going to come down to the end on us, Mississippi State, Florida, Ole Miss. But hopefully we can get him. I think that'll be a big-time player. And offensive lines where we got to get some more guys.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We got to fill in that OL.
We got to finish. And I think, there's pressure on the offensive line coach. He's got to deliver some guys.
Yeah. Well, and people ask me, is it something that the current, Grimes is doing wrong? And I'm like, well, bearing in mind, he just got back. And you might argue he's trying to fix what Hand did. So who knows, right?
You could blame him. I think Gus allocates the offensive scholarships on you know, among all the positions. And we just haven't signed enough linemen the last 3 years.
No, we haven't.
So, we need to be signing like four every year.
Yeah, and it's just so strange, too, because we're such a great running program, you know, or have been up until this past year. And you just wonder, well, why wouldn't offensive linemen want we put them in the NFL? That's one position we have been pretty successful, you know, cranking out All-Americans and All-SEC and NFL and everything. So why wouldn't they come here? I don't understand it.
I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see. We're losing Jamel Dean and Darius Slayton on top of the players, as well as, I guess, our quarterback. Yeah. But we're keeping Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson as well as Prince Tega.
Derrick Brown was a shocker.
Yeah.
I would have bet a lot of money that he was leaving. Mm-hmm. Because I think he would still be a high draft pick. There's a lot of defensive linemen in this class going to the NFL this year. A lot of these guys from Clemson and Alabama and other places. So that was going to push him down a little bit because the field was so crowded.
Yeah.
And it's a thing where he comes back, you know, he's been really good at Auburn. But he could come back and go take it to another level and end up being like a top 10 kind of pick. He has that kind of ability. And so it's huge for us. You know, to have him back on the defensive line as a difference maker, it's a huge, huge thing. So, you know, there was rumors about Prince Tega, you know, thinking about it. And Marlon Davidson, I think, you know, didn't have the kind of year that he wanted to. And he used to show that he could play and stay healthy and be a difference maker. But so I think that was good. I think some of the other guys probably thought about it. Slayton, he's fast. I'm not sure he's going to be drafted early. I think he'll be like a late last round kind of guy. He wasn't very consistent this year catching the ball.
Do you think he basically said, I'm never going to have a game better than the Purdue game, so I might as well go out on a big
Sometimes I think these guys decided it like before the season or at some other point. And that, it may be. And it may also be a thing where he looks around with the young receivers and Stidham leaving and says, I'm not going to catch as many balls next year. I should go.
Go while the iron's hot. I mean, yeah, he had three touchdowns in the Purdue game. I mean, as long as he can get NFL teams to schedule Purdue, you know. Which, by the way, I'm all in favor of us scheduling Purdue like – 9 times next year. Can we work that out? Is that doable that we could just go ahead and put them on our permanent schedule?
If we get them a home and home, I'm all in for that.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. Now, they do have a pretty decent for them class coming in this year, but, and I think they've got a bright future, but man, I would love to play that particular Purdue team every weekend. That was a very good feeling. Okay, anything else about the current state of the football team that we are missing? I don't.
No, in the offseason, we'll get into kind of a position by position, who's leaving and who's still around and who's coming kind of thoughts as we go forward.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it. So if you have specific things you're worried about, you can let us know, and we'll make sure we include those in those conversations.
Yeah, and the coaches too. The staff is shaking up a little bit. We'll have a different offensive coordinator / what is his role? Passing game? No, Cody's the passing game coordinator. He's like the quarterback coach, right? Dillingham and new running back. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see if the offense improves. We'll have a new. We're definitely going to have a new quarterback. We'll have a new quarterback coach. We'll have a new running back coach. We'll have a new person calling the plays, who's an old person. So, yeah, there's a little bit of shakeup, a little interesting stuff going on. You know, Grimes will be back in his second year back, and we'll see how the offensive line has responded. So it will be very interesting to see. Basketball. I said last year that watching Auburn basketball on like Wednesdays and Saturdays was my happy place. And when anything else was going bad in my life last winter, I could just turn on Auburn basketball and I could be in my happy place. John, my happy place has not been happy this year. I was loving it when we were beating Arizona and Xavier and playing Duke tough. And I'm like, yeah, man. But then we played badly in a game or two, and then Wiley got hurt, and Purifoy hasn't been what we were hoping he would be. the rust apparently is real. And, you know, we've become a team currently with no inside, even when Macklemore is playing, it seems like he was good leading up to the SEC season, but we've become a team that basically just jacks up three-pointers from Jared Harper and Bryce Brown, and when that's working, we're good, but inevitably it goes dry, and we have no inside game to supplement it or complement it, and the other team just... You know, it seems like every game we play, the big guy on the other team has a record night. That guy for South Carolina,
mm-hmm,
was just having like a field day. So, is it just Wiley being out? Is it our chemistry? What's going on?
A couple things. One is you never felt, even when this team was playing well in the early season, you never felt like the rotation and everything was exactly right. And then Purifoy came back, and then that jumbled it further. And then they changed to more of a Wiley-centric offense. What you said about, it's always been a Harper and Brown team. Mm-hmm. But Heron was there last year to do consistently, like 15, 18 points every single night, money in the bank, mm-hmm, and to be a third option. So if one of them was having a bad night, it didn't matter. We had this other guy who was just solid 15 points no matter what. And then you could build the rest of the offense around whichever one of the guards was having a good game, and then whatever else we got. And he's not there, so there isn't that kind of consistent third option. Some days it's this guy, and some days it's, some days it's Chuma, and some days it's, somebody else. So it...
Malik Dunbar has some...
That's what I'm saying. It's some days it's Dunbar, some days it's Anfernee. So there isn't kind of that guy that's always going to be there, be consistent. I think that's an issue. The thing with Wiley was they had this playing style, kind of a more modern basketball playing style, kind of positionless, moving around, shooting threes, mm-hmm, and attacking a lot. But they have Wiley. And so then when he came back and he was starting to get healthy and emerging, they would kind of stop doing that stuff and do the traditional, put him down in the post and he would score, he would, kick it back out to an open guy for a three, kind of a more traditional basketball offense. And it took a while for them to get that going. And then it kind of got going and it was being effective at giving some real balance to the offense. And not just that, but, without him, we have two big guys basically, and Spencer and Macklemore.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other teams you play are huge compared to Auburn.
Yeah.
I mean, Kentucky was definitely that way.
Yeah.
And without Wiley, in that game and some of the other games, Macklemore and Spencer are getting into foul trouble, and suddenly we don't have any big guys out on the court. And, we're getting pushed around, we're getting out rebounded, we can't drive in the lane, we're getting shots blocked and stuff. So I think that, I think the team was kind of going one direction, developing, and then they changed to incorporate Wiley more, and then he got hurt, and then they had to kind of shift another way, and then to develop the offense without him, and then he's going to come back in a week or two, and we're going to have to kind of shift back the other way. I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
I think the point about Heron being dependable is a good one. I think that was from – I think I remember reading that in a College of Magnolia article. The other thing I would say is even last year, this wasn't a good road team, and it's not a good road team now.
No.
We play 10 times better in Auburn – than we do on the road last year and this year. I think that's just – I think some of that, this is kind of weird to say, is a credit to how good the atmosphere in Auburn is. Mm-hmm. That the atmosphere in Auburn is so good that it makes the team play so much better that I think sometimes maybe honestly they're playing beyond their capabilities at home. Like they played – it really elevates their level. So then we see them on the road, they're like – man, why do they look so bad?
Mm-hmm.
Or not bad, but why don't they look the same? And that's kind of a weird backwards reason, but that's just my thought.
Yeah.
The good news is we have a bunch of home games coming up. We play Missouri at home on Wednesday, and they're bad. The other thing, honestly, is that the SEC as a whole is better this year.
Yes.
I mean, the SEC last year was Auburn and Tennessee and Kentucky, and kind of everybody else was mediocre, you know, not really a factor. And there's a lot of good teams in the SEC this year.
Yeah, no kidding.
The other thing I would say is that, people think, I think people get carried away and think we're terrible. And in some of the advanced stat things that rank basketball teams, Auburn is still the 16th to 18th best team in the country. Well, because that's based on the volume of work and who we've played and how well we played everybody.
I was going to say, our losses have been, for the most part, close. That's part of the frustrating part of it. We're never getting blown out. And we'll be, like we were down, 17 to Kentucky and came back and barely lost.
It is the digging ourselves a big hole thing, or letting the other team put us in a big hole, is a real problem.
Yeah, we've been doing that a lot.
You can't get so far behind.
Yeah, and that's been a thing like almost every game lately too. So, but yeah, well, the schedule does ease up a little bit. It was kind of rough to start with Kentucky, and then a couple of big road games and everything else. So, so yeah, hopefully it'll let up a little bit and we can get a few wins, get back in the positive side of the ledger. Cause right now we're 2-4 or something ridiculous in the conference. It's insane. So, all right, well, let me pause for a second. We got to thank our patrons, and I thought I had some background, music. Let me see what this one does. If I were to push this. Yeah, okay. So we got to thank our patrons for their supporting our show. For as little as $1 a month, you can help keep shows like this on the air. We have this and the White Rocket Show and the James Bond Show, among others. So just go to www.patreon.com and look for Van Allen Plexico, White Rocket. Or you can go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and you can find links to all of our shows. You can find the Patreon link. We always thank Brendan O'Dwyer. And Samuel, I'm sorry. Let me reboot myself. We thank Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drucker, Phil Amthor, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, Dave Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, and Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Cabo, I'm almost finished, John, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Way, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruthen, Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, I'm in the home stretch. Excuse me, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you guys all so much. You can help. You can also, by the way, I mentioned a little while ago, you get early access to new episodes of We Believed, and you also get free books and all kind of cool stuff if you sign up to be a patron at www.auwishbone.com. All right. Do we have, let me tap Mira on the shoulder here. I think she's still in the Houses of Parliament.
Thank you. Order, questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Please clap.
All right, what we got?
All right, our first question is from Theodore Roosevelt. And it's actually, it references what I said a minute ago. He said, you touched on the Chandler Cox replacement in your previous podcast. I think Gus may have found the replacement in J.J. Wilson. It's Wilson's his last name. He's a grad transfer from Arizona State that's a hybrid tight end fullback kind of player. Not as good a blocker as Cox, but a much better pass catcher and can bring that element out of the backfield.
Ooh, so, I like it.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know, we could use somebody else. That Cox was solid as a receiver. We could use somebody else in that role. And I think, you know, maybe we can help this guy with his blocking a little bit. But it's clear, you know, we don't have another pure fullback kind of in the pipeline. We've signed a couple of tight ends in this current class, and we have a couple of guys before that are more in the tight end role and less in the fullback kind of H-back role. Our next question is from Hugh Anderson, who says, in reference to our recent basketball discussion here, did we let Bruce get a pass for this team, or does he get the Gus treatment?
Well, see, that's fair, and I've heard people asking that lately, that, you know, I mean, and I don't think that very many people who are saying that are seriously down on Bruce. I think that people are saying, look, if you don't like Gus and you're going to hold him to a certain standard, you got to be fair and hold our other coaches, the ones that you do like, to the same standard. And that's, they've got a point, I think.
I think that's fair. I mean, I get it. I like Bruce, but the difference is that, you know, Auburn sucked at basketball for a long time. And the fact that we were good last year, we had a lot of guys coming back, raised expectations. And I also think, like, basketball and football are different, just the flow of the season and the flow of games. Like, the games there – in college basketball games, there are always these runs back and forth, you know, like –
oh, yeah.
Long, dry stretches and teams going, you know, 10 points one way, 10 points the other way. And seasons are longer. Like, at the same time, what Auburn did last year, we won the SEC title, we hadn't done that very much.
No.
So, you know, having a historical thing like that is kind of the goal for the season, was a fair goal for this group with everybody who had coming back, but it may not happen. So it doesn't mean we can't, you know, win a bunch of games and make the NCAA tournament and do some damage there. I mean, I still think this team, I would say, and we can all agree on this, this team has not played its best basketball. But the potential is still there for this team to put together a stretch where for a week or two that we go on a rampage and really do some damage to people. And if that happens in March this time instead of, like, February or, you know, January, then I'll be delighted.
Can I just, as a minimum, just ask that this season not end? Well, I know we went to the NCAA tournament, but before that, and thank the Lord, but before that, can this just not end with us getting blown out by Alabama in our first game in the SEC tournament again? Because my happy place was watching this Alabama team, I mean this Auburn team, playing Alabama and others, and then for them to come up here to St. Louis and play in the SEC tournament right here where I could go take the train over and see them, and I was so happy and so excited. I was wearing my SEC basketball champions T-shirt, and I was so excited. I got good seats, and I sat down, and I promptly watched us get our butts crushed by Alabama in the very first game we played, and I just wanted to cry and go home. And I did go home. I'm not sure I cried. So I just don't want that again. That was traumatic in the extreme. And I don't need that in my life, John.
What we've learned tonight is we need to go back to Van's Happy Place.
That's exactly where we need to be. And I don't mean by
smoke weed every day.
No, no, no. That's not what I mean. I mean by the basketball team winning basketball games on the basketball court. That's I want us to keep winning so that we have to...
We got
to
get better at celebrating.
That's what I want right there, yes.
That's it for listener questions.
All right. I guess we should take a quick trip.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but...
Speaking of the Vulgars...
No one wants to play with Nick Saban, man.
No. They'd rather go somewhere else.
I really appreciated the Bruce Feldman story about Dan Enos, the quarterback coach at Alabama, who was expected to be the offensive coordinator. And Saban came into the meeting room one morning, and they were getting ready to interview offensive line coaching candidates. And Enos and he were supposed to do the interviews, and he's like, "Where's Dan?" And everybody looks around, and he's like, "Where the hell's Dan?" And everybody knew that Dan had cleaned out his office and gone to Miami the night before to be the Miami offensive coordinator, because he'd rather do that instead of being the Alabama offensive coordinator.
Nobody wanted to tell Nick, right?
And nobody wanted to tell Saban. So.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury. But,
but the reality is, like, you know, the second year in a row, they have more than six assistant coach changes. Mm-hmm. They change offensive coordinator for, I don't know, it was like the fourth time in 5 years.
Every other, yeah.
And a defensive coordinator, this is the third one in 4 years.
You know what, Nick?
Blame yourself.
That's right.
I mean, some of it is, you know, coaches come there because they know it'll boost them up to get a job somewhere else, and they do it. But it's not where people are looking to come there and be there long term. He hired young up and coming coaches this last go round, and they all left. I mean, Josh Gattis was the receivers coach, and he did a good job of them, but he's now the offensive coordinator at Michigan. Mm-hmm. The offensive coordinator Loxley went to Maryland. I just told Enos went to Miami. He'd rather be the offensive coordinator at Miami than the offensive coordinator at Alabama. The Tasha Poy, the defensive coordinator who got toasted in the national title game, left, and he's going to be an NFL defensive line coach. They stole Mississippi State's defensive line coach today because their defensive line coach was not hanging around. And I think there was some other turnover in there too, but a lot of turnover, a lot of changes, and you know he's going to go run around and hire a bunch of coaches away from other staffs.
You just said more truth than you meant. You accidentally said some truth there, John. You accidentally let some truth spill out. Okay, all right, that's it.
But you know, they have an enormous amount of talent coming back, and they have Saban coming back. But I do think at some point it does matter. I mean, I think it matters in the consistency of how things are done, whatever. And we'll see. at the same time, like Georgia, you know, they lost both coordinators.
You know what Kirby Smart said at the
what?
Come on, man,
because his offensive and defensive coordinators are gone.
His defensive coordinator went to Colorado to be the head coach, Matt Tucker, and you can't blame him. But then Tennessee stole their offensive coordinator.
That's interesting.
And Georgia fans were all like, "Yeah, we wanted him to leave. We didn't like him." But you liked him when they were rolling up and down the field on Alabama, mm-hmm. You know, in that game. And again, they got to the national title game last year, and they got to the SEC title game and the Sugar Bowl this year with him. So I don't think he was that bad. Mm-hmm. So we'll see, you know, what happens there. And then Ole Miss is the other school that they're changing both coordinators. Our guy McGriff has got pushed out because they were so terrible on defense there.
That's not surprising.
But it'll be interesting to see. They're starting over from ground zero with some of their stuff. So,
it's just, yeah, the deck's getting shuffled. Well, we got a new more or less offensive coordinator, quote unquote, too. So, I mean,
true.
There's some interesting, there's not a lot of head coaching changes going on this offseason, but there's an awful lot of deck chairs getting rearranged. You know, this is an interesting offseason. There's off seasons in the SEC where there's just wholesale carnage, you know? And then there's off seasons where hardly anybody changes, and it seems to be one or the other. It's rarely like one coach, you know. It's usually either like six or nobody. And in those nobody years, and there may have been one that I'm forgetting, but in those nobody years, it seems like they do a whole lot of coordinator musical chairs. And so that feels like what we're in right now. And it usually what happens is some of them work out, some of them don't. And after another year of that, then you get the massacre, you know, where the head coaches are like, well, we tried changing coordinators. That didn't work, so we're just going to fire the coach. It could happen to us, you know. We don't know. So, but it could happen all the way around, so.
Well, and I would say do not assume that the musical chairs have stopped because
that's right.
After signing day on February 6th, I expect there to be another round of assistant coach changes at a bunch of SEC schools.
That's a good point. And that's what I would like to – that's what I think of as the unethical, you know, firing of the coordinators and coaches, because that's where you say, you know, come to our program. You like this recruiting coach. You like this position coach. And then they sign. You're like, ha, he's fired. But you're too late. See, didn't we just actually just set the record the other day for somebody entering the transfer window within 2 weeks of signing? They hadn't even reported to campus.
I don't know about that, but I know that it's a – I mean, there are players who are leaving and changing faster and faster. And I think – the rule hasn't happened already, but I think there's a real, you know, down the road, there may be a thing that says if you sign and your position coach or coordinator or head coach leaves, you can leave.
It's the USC. USC signed a 5-star player, and within 2 weeks, he's transferring. Oh, good God. I think at that point, you need to just, if you're the athletic director at USC, and it's Lynn Swan, maybe. At that point, you go to the player and say, look, I see the problem here. You stay. We need to fire the coach. Come on, let's be honest, you know. So you've just highlighted the problem is all you've done there is not, you know. So you don't need to go. We'd rather have you than the coach at this point. So, oh, boy. All right. Well, we've got basketball coming up this week. We've got the women's basketball team doing very well. I believe the gymnastics team's doing pretty well. We don't really cover all those sports, but we do occasionally mention them.
I had a few big track and field wins this weekend.
Awesome, awesome. And I know the baseball team will be getting cranked up sooner or later.
No, I was making a joke about Anthony Schwartz.
And, oh, that's right.
Shivers and whoever else is on the track team wins.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
That's right. And he did. Shiver, right?
Shivers got a bronze, and Schwartz got the gold or the first place, and Shivers got third. And somebody else, Igbenyagani, I think, was first or second in the long jump, their triple jump, I think.
Excellent. Well, is that the SEC?
I don't even remember which meet it was, but I just thought it was exciting they won.
Absolutely. That's great. That's very exciting. You know, we got some real athletes on that team, and we really do. And we've got lots of good players coming in, including Bo Nix and our big new linebacker. And, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how spring gets cranked up. And we'll do our A-Day coverage as always, and it'll be fun. So, all right, any last thoughts tonight before we wrap up on this sort of end of January, kind of taking stock of things episode?
Let's enjoy some home cooking and basketball for a while. How about that?
That's right. And we're currently a little over a month away from the return of racing. I'm very excited about that because that's a sport that I don't have to be emotionally involved in, so I don't get depressed when something happens because I don't care. I just watch it and enjoy it. And one other thing I got to close with, because it doesn't happen all the time, I have a new novel that'll be out this week. I have a brand new novel coming out this week called Caroline Heart Cold as Ice. Sort of a science fiction fantasy. It's the third book in my series with Lucian and Baranak. It's kind of like Jim Starlin, Jack Kirby, cosmic beings, you know, space opera, all that cool stuff. You get a kick. So, Caroline Heart Cold as Ice will be out on Kindle and in paperback on Amazon probably right now as I speak. And I got another one, a military sci-fi called Alpha Omega that should be out the next month or so. So keep an eye out. All right, John, well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.